Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chain, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. And if you find tonight, if you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out our poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. What's up?
Not a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Just about not a thing here. You know, life has its simple pleasures. I made banana cake with chocolate chips in it, which is yum, yum good. Chicken dinner, always a winner. Keeping busy. And tomorrow I'm going to attend a poetry workshop at the library. I don't know if it'll be stuff that I already know, but I figure, you know what, it's not that far away. And you never know. I'm plenty to learn about poetry, so I might actually learn something new. So I'm looking forward to that. And you keeping yourself busy, I imagine you always are.
Busy enough, yes.
Yep. And hopefully finding time to relax too. So, well, We've got a great lineup of poetry tonight. We've got a few different, like I think about three different contests, but we have carryovers from the course of art. We have carryovers from the Fiddle Dee Dee prompt, poem prompt. Then we will be getting into our main subject, which, because depending on where you live, it's already Friday the 13th, or it soon will be. I decided it would be great fun to put up a prompt about, or put up a contest about superstition or being superstitious. And we had some great responses to that. It's good stuff. And then, you know, if we have time, we will get into the carryovers from the Once Upon a Time rock and roll show. If we don't get to those, I'm going to put those first on next week's After Midnight, which we will also have, prompts from the contest I'm running, or poems from the contest I'm running for that. So, yeah. So we got a great night of poetry to dig into. And what do you got for us first, Rex?
We got Johnny Saxophone by Myriad Dot. Hold that thought, more to come. Oh, what avenue is this? Notes living like fine white ash, poetry of oceans, open ceramic phrasings. Is this Beale Street, New Orleans, Dixieland? Or did I imagine it all? Do we consider those who burned before us in that musical crucible? I heard Shirley Bird Parker sax wailing, and Satchmo earthquaking, and Django 12 barn, and Krupa cymbaling, all burning bridges and enveloped in white tongues of fire. Sax in the night, such a conflagration of gathering congregations, hot ash music scores, oh, that sensual sax catawall, consuming us still, solipsistic with clown makeup, holding a sea of tapers up to lights up passages of music. My poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what an awesome write. And he wrote to the painting that was of a man playing the saxophone. I love the imagery in this and how he pays tribute to the music of jazz, and especially to some of the places that have become, and people that have become an important part of that history. I really thought this was an excellent write that spoke to me on the music that moves and consumes. It consumes our soul, it consumes our mind. And in a good way, though, you know, in a way that moves us. And I thought this was great all the way through. But I especially like where he puts, do we consider those who burned before us in the musical crucible? I heard Charlie Bird Parker's sax wailing and Satchmo earthquaking and Django 12 barring and Krupa cymbaling, all burning bridges and enveloped in white tongues of fire, sax in the night, such a conflagration of gathering congregations. And I like how such a conflagration of gathering congregations, hot ash music scores, speaks on both the spirituality and the sensuality of jazz music. So amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that last stanza, which you just read, to sit on that note of the open air touch that jazz allowed, it gave the instrumentalist in the moment, whether it be the sax, the trumpet, or the guitarist, the allowance to move into his own realm while everybody else kept the pace behind him. He could move off into something a little bit more off the tone beat, so to speak, and allow the music to blossom in the moment, as what Myriad is talking about here, that note to letting the sound carry you in the moment to reach more people, let them experience what you're feeling and then expressing as you play those instruments.
Amen to that. I like what you had to say about allowing music to blossom in the moment. Very cool. All right. And what do we got next?
Actress in Her Own Life by Jody Melton.
In deep thought lies angle sharp and obtuse, a canvas bears the weight of the reclusive muse. Her form bathed in hues and geometric shapes speaks in silent wails of an imminent escape. Her face, a mosaic of despair and futile hopes, is a labyrinth of shadows with sorrowful slopes. A symphony of lines and planes confine her spirit. Her eyes, windows to agony, unveil her merit. A quiet storm brews within her soul's chamber. Her heart weaves the fabric of her somber slumber. She exists in a universe of complex geometry, a silent observer to her own life's symphony. Her frame entangled in the dance of shape and lines, each angle reflecting the pain that in her pines. The triangle sharp slices her silent scream, her soul prisoner to this geometric dream. Every square a cell of her infinite prison, her fate a relentless and unyielding decision. She seems destined to dance in perpetual agony, a prisoner in her silent geometric symphony. But her spirit untamed and furiously resilient whispers tales of freedom so distant yet brilliant. Her painted soul captive breathes a silent plea, a wish to break the chains and finally be free. The colors around her seem to drain her essence, yet within her there's a well of immense presence. Every geometric form that shapes her fate is a reminder it's never too late to create. Her silent symphony speaks of pain and of strife, yet within her colors lies the essence of life. She remains complacent in her destined suffer, her soul a beacon extraordinarily tougher. Her geometric world is both cage and key, a reminder of pain and of the beauty to see. In this painted realm of shapes and despair, she's both the artist and the Maiden Fair poem. And what a wonderful write by Jody Melton. And your thoughts, Rex?
Mm-hmm. Nice outlay of thought walking in the idea of the geometric shapes and play off the angles of the lines and the way they cut and center things. And he rolls that all the way down through the whole thing, but he finishes off with that last stanza. Her geometric world is both cage and key, a reminder of pain and the beauty to see. In this painted realm of shapes and despair, she's both the artist and the maiden fair, offering up that tone of it's all about her in the moment. She's the artist and the impresario as far as the maiden goes, because she hits that actress in her own life. Although this is what she's drawn of herself, and this is who she wants to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, I really like this. It had wonderful rhyme and flow, and you know, great imagery. And I like how, he used the geometric shapes that are used in the cubism style of the artist Georgi Korosov, And I feel like, you know, not only does that make for good symbolism and metaphors for feeling trapped within a box and feeling the sharp emotional pain that life can bring, but it also pays tribute to the style of the artist. And I like how he brings this character to life, all her struggles, all her pain. And I like how he delves into the formation of a woman who struggles to show who she truly is, to show people her strength of character that oftentimes cannot be seen beneath the despair felt. And I really like this all the way through, but especially her spirit untamed and fiercely resilient whispers tales of freedom so distant yet brilliant. Her painted soul captive breathes a silent plea, a wish to break the chains and finally be free. And I like how in the end he says, in this painted realm of shapes and despair, she's both the artist and the maiden fair. She is someone who has found a way to express herself and yet seeks for something more as far as freedom and self-expression goes. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And those were our two carryovers from Georgi Korsov. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
For Vittle de Deed by John Hollander. What's the French for fiddle de dee? But fiddle de dee's not English. We learned from Alice and must agree. The fiddle we know, but what's from dee? Le chat d'assise and an English tree. But what's the French for fiddle de dench? That is to say, for monkey wrench. Once in the words, he produced a stench. What's the Greek for fiddle de dex? That is to say, brekekekex. The frog prince turned out to be great at sex. What's the earth for fiddle de derse? That is to say, for violent curse. But one's to you for your English verse. What's the melee for fiddle de day? That is to say, for that is to say, there are true cinnamons anyway. What's the poly for fiddle de dolly? That is to say, for Silicon Valley. Mayo deserves you, the Nasdaq won't really, or rally. What's the Norwegian for fiddle de derogen? That is to say, for his name is Legion. The aquavit's known in every region. What's the Punjabi for fiddle de dabi? That is to say, for crucifer lobby. They asked for Dali, but were sent Kohl Abbey. What's the Dutch for fiddly Dutch? That is to say, for they are much. Pea soup and burgers and tulips and such. What's the Farsi for fiddle de Darcy? That is to say, for devote yourself, Darcy. In Italian, the Irish would call it Darcy. Well, what's the Italian for fiddle de dallion? That is to say, for spotted stallion. It makes him more randy so much on a scallion. Having made so free with fiddle de dee, what's to become now of fiddle de dum? I think I know that word still, mum and pum.
Oh, great read there, Rex. I knew that write would be just perfect for your voice. Yeah, I do highly recommend that if anybody hasn't read the poetry of John Hollander, that they do so. He's got some just absolutely brilliant poetry. This one's a bit off the wall and quirky, but it's why I liked it. I saw this poem and, you know, how it was inspired by the quote by Alice in Wonderland. And the way he took the wordplay and the way he had fun with it, I think to me there's just such a delightful biting humor and use of wordplay and imagery in this that as soon as I saw it, I thought, you know what, I want to see what people are inspired to write for this poem. I really thought each individual part was fun. I do particularly like what's the Punjabi for fiddle de dabi, that is to say for crucifer lobby. They asked for Dal, but were sent Kohlrabi. The whole idea that, I think to me, there's just such a wonderful idea of the silliness of miscommunication within these lines. And Rex, you did a great read of that. What were your thoughts on this poem?
Rolls in that note of nonsense poetry. Not made them make any sense, just to have fun with the angle play.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, sometimes you just have to do that. You know, that's why nonsense poetry exists, which Lewis Carroll was great at that. Because sometimes you really just have to have fun with words, you know. And so very cool. All right. What do we got next?
Superstitions, Carmack at Chaos by Jenny the Deep.
Did I put that in the wrong spot? Let me check. Because that shouldn't have been put up next. I might have put it on the wrong spot. No. You just accidentally grabbed the wrong one.
Hang on, I'll get it.
Okay.
There it is. A Conversation with Self, 11:36 p.m., The Exploration of Frontiers by Liquid Mind Forever.
Well, honey, I'm sorry. But you keep grabbing the superstition rights, and you're
That's
supposed to be grabbing the what?
That's what's next.
Yeah, but you're supposed to be grabbing the fiddle DD rights because we're doing the poem inspired by that poem Fiddle DD.
I did do that right.
Third time's a charm.
Not so fidgety by Betty Page. There you go.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. All right. I'm So Fidgety by Betty Page. I'm so fidgety. Ooh, I'm so fidgety. Give me some more strong coffee. Gotta stay busy. I'm so fidgety, sipping on my English tea, nervous poetry. I'm so fidgety, spun like Alice, so I run to the Queen's Palace. I'm so fidgety, wired like Coca-Cola, tainted sweet soda. I'm so fidgety. Won't my hero rescue me, come so recklessly? I'm so fidgety. I'm fiddling around we three in menagerie. I'm so fidgety, wet and wild, let's go for miles, so purely carefree. I'm so fidgety, fun and fancy free, that's me, high at the party. I'm so fidgety, just going down to Georgia, meet the devil, yeah. I'm so fidgety, being chased by my demons, fiddling freedoms, end poem. And what an absolutely clever write by Betty Page. And your thoughts, Rex?
She took the fiddle quite right, running on that note for the last line, fiddling freedoms, and left it at the run because in order to fiddle, you got to be fidgety, so you might as well hit on the idea of why you're so fidgety in a moment, whether it's the coffee or the English tea, speaking of caffeine, and then rolling into Coca-Cola, tainted sweet soda, walking different sort there. And what else we got? So purely carefree, high at the party, and then going down to Georgia, meet the devil, yeah. So that kind of hits on the note of... so I've gone a little bit over the edge. Now it's time to do something besides.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed this one. I gave this one the silver. I liked her use of repetition and wordplay. I think you made some great observations because, yes, the the whole idea of being fidgety on those caffeine and sugar highs. I had told her that I thought it said clever imagery and metaphors and great use of repetition and excellent write on the restless spirit seeking beings, exuberant insanity and highs of life. And she responded with, I wanted the reader to feel as if they were amped up in sugar and caffeine and sugar. And I can definitely see that. And I like how she took the phrase fiddle-dee-dee in so many different directions. Like she has the reference to Alice in Wonderland. I'm so fidgety, spun like Alice, so I run to the Queen's Palace. I also really like the reference to the song, The Devil Went Down to Georgia. I'm so fidgety just going down to Georgia, meet the devil, yeah. I'm so fidgety being chased by my demons, fiddling freedoms. I like the phrase fiddling freedoms, not only for the alliteration, but for the whole idea that it brings to mind the thoughts of those freedoms that we play with. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Saga of Fiddle-de-Dee by Connolly. A lovely young lass named Diddle-dee-dum had skin like a peach and smelled like a plum, but her friends thought her name sounded dumb, so they nicknamed her Fiddle just for fun. When Fiddle-dee-dum turned 23, she met a young lad named Tweedle-dee-dee. They soon wed and had on their marriage decree her new name was written, Fiddle-de-Dee. Fiddle got pregnant and could hardly walk. She got so big it was hard not to gawk. Soon she had triplets, and it came as a shock when she named them Hickory, Dickory, Dock. And poem.
Oh, I like this one, and you did a great read of that, Rex. You know, brilliant rhyme and wordplay. This was clever, and it was entertaining. And what I really appreciated about this and why I just felt like it deserved the gold is it had the same kind of delightful sense of quirkiness that was a reflection of the prompt poem and yet had its own voice, its own spirit. I really like how he tells a story in three stanzas. You know, that story of, you know, girl meets boy, and then has triplets. Great fun twist at the end. Soon she had triplets, and it came as a shock when she named them Hickory, Dickory, Dock. This was definitely a write that brought a smile to my face and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yeah, Connolly played this one out really well. It was fun, humorous, and the ending was definitely a twist. Hickory Dickory Dock, running into that mouse.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's for sure. Yeah, great comment. All right. And what do we have next?
Fiddle-de-Dee, A Snake is Poaching by Jenny the Deep.
What's the word, dodo bird? Yodel ye ye hoo, echoes a song of caution. Fiddle-dee-dee-doo is what's heard as listeners ignore all signs of toxin. Yodel ye ye hoo echoes a song of caution. Norwegian, French, Italian, or Greek as listeners ignore all signs of toxin. The great curse is lurking upon us, so to speak. Norwegian, French, Italian, or Greek. Universally, the serpent means one thing. The great curse is lurking upon us, so to speak. So lock your doors, enjoy one last fling. Universally, the serpent means one thing. You better run, danger is approaching. So lock your doors, enjoy one last fling. Sweet Alice, your twiddle-dee a snake is poaching. You better run, danger is approaching. Take my advice, heed my warning, sweet Alice. your Tweedledee a snake is poaching, so don't close your eyes, stay awake till morning. End poem. And what a great write by Jenny the Deep. And your thoughts, Rex?
Rolling back to the original sin, that of paying heed to the serpent, although on this angle it kind of hints at that notion of Alice, you're about to give it all up, whether it's Norwegian, French, Italian, or Greek, that snake is coming to call, and hey, you know what? He's looking for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I like how, again, you know, we do have some humor and wordplay, but really she gets to a very serious message. And as you were pointing out, there is that idea of original sin, the idea of the serpent representing evil. Now, in not all cultures do serpents represent evil, but oftentimes they do, or snakes. Sometimes there are cultures where they actually can represent good luck. I gave this one a bronze because I liked the message within. I like how deep she went with the message. There's amazing imagery and metaphors, a great rhyme and flow. And to me, this was really an excellent write on having to constantly be aware that evil is lurking near the nest, near our home. You know, we can't assume that we're safe from the plans of evil. I do like how she put the yodeling in there. That was fun. A bit of a tongue twister. Yodel yee yee hoo echoes a song of caution. And then where she says at the end, so don't close your eyes, stay awake till morning. I think that makes for a great metaphor and the idea of always having to be on guard against evil that would destroy the human spirit. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next?
Kitty Cat Riot by Paul D. Fisher, PhD. It's a kitty cat riot. Those babies won't be quiet. It is 3 a.m., so it must be them, but they will just meow and deny it. Meow, 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 meow. Cats want their breakfast early. The old food has grown hard and gnarly. Wake up the whole family. Time for kitties to have food and tea. So what noise do we hear by the door? The hallway hat rack hit the floor, but it really isn't anything much more than a kitten riot. Till they eat, they won't be quiet. Meow, 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 meow. After breakfast, it is time for cats to get out on the porch so we can see all the critters, of course. Jump at birds and squirrels, but the mesh wire stops our pouncing, of course. Meow. And poem.
Oh, I love that read, Rex. I thought about actually putting Rex read this one, but I thought, nah, he'll most likely grab it. And if he doesn't, I might just push it back over to him. I knew from your experience of reading so much of Lawrence 67 that you would be able to pull off cat voice. You know, at first I wasn't really sure how this connected with the prompt. So, you know, but then I thought about it. I'm like, well, Alice in Alice in Wonderland had a cat. So I can definitely see it connecting that way. But then I thought, and even if it doesn't connect, it still connects in the way that it's just absolutely fun. Not only is the write itself fun, but listening to you pull off the meows and the roars definitely brought a smile to my face. This is fun and entertaining. And, you know, I think anybody who does have or has had cats in the past understands about how much those felines, you know, love frolicking in the middle of the night. I especially like where he says, cats want their breakfast early. The old food has grown hard and gnarly. Wake up the whole family. Time for kitties to have food and tea. And then when he has meow, 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 it makes you think of the Meow Mix commercials. But a very fun write. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, it works with the kittens, yeah, but also kind of hints at the thought of kids, too. 3 a.m., feeding time, and the crying, whether it's meow or just, or screams for food. Wake up the whole family at time because he's had food and tea. Basically, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Then the thought of it walking into that world of Alice. Well, you've got the Cheshire Cat, yes. But cats are playful night, well, nocturnal creatures. And things do get to hitting the floor when they get to roaming and playing and just having that quiet riot of being who and what they are until they get the attention they want. That's what all the noise is for. Then the sort of back end of this, that's both angles. That's kids and cats in that last stanza.
Yep, exactly. I saw before that they actually have now beds that have like a maze underneath the frame. So your cats can run around in the maze right beneath your bed in the middle of the night. I'm not sure that's such a great idea. Now, my kids used to love to either not wake me up so they could sneak whatever food they wanted, or they'd wake me up in that creepy way of just standing next to my bed and staring at me until I opened my eyes and saw this lovely little creepy child just staring at me in the shadows. So, yep, but very fun, right?
The children of the corn.
That's right. Thankfully, I didn't have any blonde-haired children. Well, I take that back. Two of my children had blonde hair when they were younger, but then it got darker. So, yes, the whole children of the corn thing was very appropriate. all right. What do we got next, Rex?
A conversation itself at 11:36 p.m., the exploration of frontiers.
Is this for me?
You're next, yes. Ooh. Damn.
Okay. Absolutely.
It's a long one.
That's all right. I'll be like, you know what? I'll finish this read and you'll just go straight into commenting because I'll be drinking something and I juice, but, you know, something. And this is A Conversation with Self at 11:36 p.m., The Exploration of Frontiers by Liquid Mind Forever. I've read and or heard said there's an element of truth even in the most remote, absurd, or seemingly unbelievable, although some great minds have poo-pooed superstition, and many consider the life and times recorded in Gnostic and biblical teachings of Jesus and Nazareth at best superstition of the blind-minded kind, yet that does not necessarily prove in reality that Jesus did not live, fish for food, and fish for men's soul to be redeemed. If we can't prove, we can't disprove either. Today, seemingly for lack of anything better to do, we nitpick on tradition long-standing and a forced upon us religious doctrine of dogma, people and their First Amendment right to speak the name of Jesus for its consideration, considered a superstitious sacrilege worthy of death. You know, I too, like most people I've known, do not like being told what I can and cannot do, think or believe in or hope for or speak of or even think out loud about. At the very least, superstitions, as they become labeled, have uplifted the sick and dying, the desperate, the addicted, the battered and provided the impetus for reindoctrination back into a life and world that may have discarded due to racism, abject hatred, for anything that does not agree with the thinking or beliefs of various group mentalities, punishable by ostracizing those who believe and practice such from all the tutor possibilities by superstitious witch hunters. Live and let live is a proverb, a way of life, a peace offering, mind your business slogan used in many 12-step programs, which according to sources comes from the law of merchants and adopted as a peaceful way of allowing others to go about their business without causing harm to anyone and for all of us, as an example of how to place focus on what's important. Treat others as you would yourself wish to be treated, or do unto others as you would like to be done unto you. Is this not the kindness of another to his neighbor? Is a smile, a kind word, forgiveness, pardon, a blessing for all of us? Does it not allow us to let go our holding breath, release the knots in our stomachs, the frowns etched deeply into our brows, and so on? There are many proverbs, aphorisms, quotes that have become ways of life for many around the world and perhaps in space as well. The real question for me is, are we coming from a place of love or from a place of fear? A Course in Miracles teaches this and exemplifies this throughout its three books. Perhaps everything could be or should be expressed as conditional of this world and invented to help us in hard times. If religion is in fact fictitious and not based on variable fact, so be it. But bless the unction of relief for the sick and dying. Regardless, it helps ease the deep fears we have, fear of abandonment and fear of rejection. Let everyone decide for themselves throughout their lifetime and continue exploring this great frontier of mind, origin, and the unknown without being penalized, persecuted, or prosecuted for this lifelong journey into the unknown realms. Live and let live. Do unto your children as you would have them do unto the generations to come. Practice what you preach, another way of not passing judgment so readily without holding up the mirror of justice before your eyes. Become a savior. Offer your gift of acceptance with a heartwarming smile and the silence of higher understanding. Let us utilize the guidelines that have been passed down for centuries in a sincere attempt to engender a peaceful, safe, forgiving planet and world for all, including all possibility for all people in all lands. And let us offer a good night's sleep to our children and our children's children. Superstition? Long live rock and roll. Let the good times roll. Let's all boogie on as we choose our own guidance and the steps we take towards peace. Sleep with the angels. If these thoughts grant you hope, peace, and a good night's rest without panic attacks, sleeping pills, or Prozac, should we ban proverbs like the above? Like George Orwell demonstrates in his book, 1984, A Totalitarian Society, or Live and Let Live, end poem. And, wow, great. I have to say that one. Thank you. Thank you. And I was going to say it deserves a round of applause, not the read, but the read itself. But go ahead.
I think the liquid's getting on there is the fact that we forget why fear, anger, and hatred are so well used to pit one sect against another sect, one religion against another religion, one people against another people. It's because while we are busy fighting each other and quibbling over the insincerity of one thing or another based on another thing or another, then we are not paying attention to those who do the ruling. And when that happens, it's the left hand doing something else while the right hand is keeping y'all busy being pitted one against the other. And if the age-old precepts out of the Talmud, the Bible, and out of Muhammad's book, if you're into that or any one of the other Buddha or Hindu, anything else, if you're basing your whole life around that, that's fine. But don't preach to the point where you denigrate, disingenuate anybody because of what they believe in. And even if you're in one of those religions where you live by it and still question it, don't denigrate or give hardship to them. The idea of looking further beyond the actual teachings is a good thing. Maybe there's something in there that you've got questions about and you need to have answers to. That doesn't mean you should be put down, ostracized, thrown out, kindled, or thrown in prison, so to speak, or out of life as a whole, just because you're asking questions. The idea is to shift on that, live and let live. The idea that was the fundamental rule out of all the Jews to begin with. You let the person run their own lives, and they give you the presence of mind to let you run your own life. That's the basic principle behind all religious attitudes anyway. So, and the idea shifts on the idea of the law of merchants. It isn't governments who regulate the thought of commerce. It is those who, out of that note early on in the world of travel when it started opening up, those merchants understand the note of commerce and where trade and how trade works and what is to be paid for one thing versus another and how you trade for that, what money you pay for, if you barter for it, or whatever. They do know that operative angle, and they should be the ones that run the thought of commerce itself instead of governments. Because by the time you get down to the bottom, she had done that in 1984, and it's through totalitarianism, and that's why everybody keeps, why the bigwigs keep people pitted against one another, is because they want total control. And the only way to have that is to have everybody bitching and fighting among themselves, so they don't pay attention to the laws that they pass and the fact that they now have got total control of everything to the point that you can't eat, sleep, or shit without them in your business. And once that's done, we're back to feudal times where the kings, the queens, the magistrates all have their interests in mind, but not yours, and you will own nothing, and you will eat what they tell you to eat. You will shit where they tell you to shit, and you will sleep where they tell you to sleep. Nothing else matters to them except that.
Amen to that. And that, no, that is so true, Rex. Great comment there, because, yeah, they keep us distracted fighting amongst each other in order to gain control. I really like the imagery and metaphors in this. I mean, there's just strong, hard-hitting lines all the way through. And it not only speaks on that idea of that totalitarian society controlling people by nitpicking, as you were saying, but also to me, I like how she has such a strong voice speaking on the idea that, yeah, you know what, maybe parts of religious and teachings from the Bible and other religious texts are in part a superstition, or maybe they are in part not true, but who are you to, as she says, you know, although some great, and she puts great minds in quotations, have poo-pooed superstition, and many consider the life and times recorded in Gnostic and biblical teachings of Jesus of Nazareth at best superstitions of the blind-minded kind. Yet that does not necessarily prove in reality that Jesus did not live fish for food and fish for men's souls to be redeemed. if we can't prove, we can't disprove either. When you can't fully prove a truth, then that's where faith comes in. And I like how as she goes through this rite, she says basically, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, so what if there may be some untruth? You know, and one of the things you brought up, Rex, was the fact that, you know what, be open-minded to other religions, of other texts, religious texts, because you might not agree with everything, but you might find something you can learn. And that's the thing with the Bible, is there is a lot to be learned as far as, you know, how we treat others. And, you know, I mean, there's definite wisdom to be found within the Bible, as there's definite wisdom to be found in many other texts. And if nothing else, so many people find comfort in their spirituality and their spiritual beliefs and the belief of a higher power, especially in a time of sickness or suffering. And this is a strong rite all the way through. I like how she approached, because one of the things I did say with this contest, I put up different prompts, but I said that people could just write on the topic of superstitions or superstitious in general. And that's what Liquid Mind Forever did. And I liked her approach to the topic because it reminds us not to too quickly pass judgment on what gives wisdom from one generation to the next and guidance, and what gives people comfort. Just because we see it as a superstition doesn't mean it has no value. So amazing rite and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Got Me Good Luck Laptop by Peter Solway. Wave of Hands, Open Sesame. Aladdin Screen, Three Wishes for a Poem. Contest Begging, Cat Playing with Tail. Pour a Poor Priest Whiskey, Ode to Ramble, Message from Warm the Brain, An Irish Summer Without Rain. Further On, Wine to Commune with, Grand Meaning. Black Cat to Piddle, Fallen Ladder Spell, Persian Rug Hang Out, All This Sun and Chlorophyll, Wishes Delirious, Tomorrow, Procrastinate If Possible, Bless Me Sacred Tongue Within, Dear Aladdin to Turn My Laptop South, Head in All Directions, Not One at a Time, Halo of Einstein, Greek Virgins, A Vatican Fan, Pope to Kick a Contest Off, Topic of Good Luck, Curse of Updates, Aladdin Screen, Turning Off. Try Later, Rabbit to Whisper, Alice to Insist, A Ode to Celtic Defense, Washing Me Spectral, Special Glass, Rainbows of Pronunciation, Batteries of Aladdin, Diminishing into the Stonehenge Distance, All That Lifting, Breakfasts of Sunshine, Kneel Before My Chosen Women, Mormon of Anti-Boredom, 7 Days of Creation, Never Enough, No Need to Fill In, Alice Telling Toreador Misogynist, Sex Addict, Garlic and Crucifix, Electrocution, Lethal Injection, Bull of Ritual, Worsen Ads Repeatable, Nietzsche Expendable, Soluble, Useless on Mother's Chase Lounge, Ads in German, Heidi Pissin, Glaciers from Mount Bonk Retracting, All Disintegrating. But this laptop opener, Pandora's Rich Brother, Know the Evil Mother, Third Eye with Sunglasses, Triple Lenses, Aladdin the Optometrist obliging, Anubis in his Parking Lot obliging, Though Triplet are Wishing Long Gone, That Night with the Choir of Twins, Oh Handsome as Blake's Angels, Marlon Brando on a Motorcycle, Sort of Smile at the Camera, Look Immortal, When My Mother, God Bless Her Deep and Risen, Passed, PSTD No More, Out the Sea Through Ceiling, Crosswords All Done, Once Her Middle-Class Socialist Talents, Trotskin, Stalin, Getting Along, In Russia of Vast Motherland, Steps and Gulags of Bleak Nothing, Prayer of Respect of a Green Heaven to Sing. And pause.
Great read there, Rex. Oh, man. This is another one that brought a smile to my face. You know, I love the biting tone of the humor within this, almost sardonic-like. I like how, to me, anyways, there's this look on how too oftentimes as poets or creatively minded people, we look towards luck in hoping to get that poem out. I really like Black. I mean, I like this all the way through because there's just so many clever lines and a great look at how throughout history, you know, superstitions have been played with because of our desire not only for luck, but also to have a control over life, to have a control that things will go the way we want them to. And I like the humor in Black Cat to Piddle, Fallen Ladder, Spell, Persian Rug, Hangout, All This Sun and Chlorophyll, Wishes Delirious, Tomorrow, Procrastinate if Possible. You know, if luck's not going to come, then I'm just going to procrastinate with my writing. I like Rainbows of Pronunciation, Batteries of Aladdin. Batteries of Aladdin makes me think of licking batteries. I don't know why, but Diminishing into the Stonehenge Distance, All That Lifting, Breakfast of Sunshine. Kneel Before My Chosen Women, Mormon of Anti-Boredom, 7 Days of Creation, Never Enough, No Need to Fill In. I mean, you know, to me, it just got this, I like how he references so many different, he has so many different cultural references, like Alice in Wonderland and Stalin and Marlon Brando and, you know, with the, oh, handsome as Blake's Angels, Marlon Brando on a motorcycle, sort of smile at the camera, look immortal. That idea that within the grasp of finding luck through superstitions, we find that ourselves delving into the realm of the desired immortality. So just a clever write all the way through and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I guess it's the ease in technology and the thought of having that magic lamp that you can rub and it gets you 3 wishes, or that note to the magic word which opens up the template and allows you to breathe easy upon it in open sesame. And right up contest begging, cat playing with tail. Idea there, the cat play, because he hits on the Black Cat, the Piddle, Fallen Ladder, Spell, that idea of, hey, superstition, yes, but also that note to bad luck, because the wish is delirious because of what you're looking at and finding, and tomorrow. I can do it then, because you're looking into those other things. And the thought, bless me, sacred tongue within, dear lad, to turn my laptop south, head in all directions, not one at a time. The idea of it doesn't matter what you get into, all of a sudden you might be in China as opposed to Argentina on the next kick-in, poke to kick off a contest, idea of hierarchy, then the sort of the curse of updates, Aladdin screen turning off, but I can't take it in the moment, too much. Then going back later, and you find the Celtic defense might hit on the idea of playing chess. Wishing me special glass, again, a computer note. And what else we got? Kneel Before My Chosen Women. All right. Hitting on the TikTok women or whatever those they call themselves now. Mormon of anti-boredom. Okay. You might be a Mormon in the moment, but you're a bit bored, so how do you get past that? Well, yeah, look at the women online 7 days of creation, never enough, no need to fill in. Kind of a dense kind of look at himself. Toreador, misogynist, sex addict, garlic and crucifix, electrocution, lethal injection, bull of ritual, worse than ads, repeatable, Nietzsche, expendable, soluble, useless, on Mother's Chase Lounge. Got all this info, and yet it's kind of useless in the moment because you're outside relaxing on a chase lounge. You think about garlic and a crucifix, all right? You've got Dracula, electrocution, horror movies, lethal injection, what's going on with those who do mass murder, bull of ritual, the running of the bulls in Spain. And then all those ads that keep sticking in, because you don't want the ads while you're watching something, but you can't get past it. And then you get a sort of ads in German, Heidi Pissing, glaciers from Mount Bog retracting, all disintegrating. Then you get that more news. Ah, global warming, it's coming your way. Watch out, the waters are rising. All hell is coming to earth. And then it's, but this laptop opener, Pandora's rich, there you go, Pandora, instead of that note to finding out anything and everything in a moment's note at the tip of your fingers, all of a sudden, it's become Pandora's box. Everything let loose except hope. Know the evil mother, third eye with sun biases. Yeah, the ones who come in their plain brown wrappers, so to speak. The evil ones, those that take life and take it easily. The triple lenses, the optometrist, the blurred vision, it's on the idea of blue lights streaming, drying of the eyes, because he hits on the sort of optometrist. Let's see what else. Blake's Angels. I haven't heard of Blake's Angels. I wonder if that's supposed to be Charlie's Angels. But then again, doesn't matter. Marlon Brando, the idea of making those poses to have somebody view your picture and see you as you want to be shown, as opposed to how you really are. I like the last one. Trotsky and Stalin getting along. Boy, that's a hideous concept, considering Stalin had Trotsky murdered after he ran him out of Russia way back in the day. Steps and gulags and bleak nothing. Again, a pun in cheek, so to speak. Prayer of respect, all agreeing, having to sing. Well, that last stanza really was a note to wry, dry, dark humor that easily walks the notes and pleases, because not a bit of it is truthful.
Wow, those are some really in-depth and thoughtful comments there, Rex. One of the things I thought about while you were commenting, and I thought about a lot of things, but I won't share them all, is the whole idea of how we become too dependent on technology and often lose the ability to just, create and form in our own mind. And all you have to do is Google William Blake's paintings of angels, and you will see a whole bunch of them, because William Blake was known for doing a lot of religious imagery within his artwork and his poetry. Wonderful comment there. Great observations. And what do we got next?
Superstitions, Karmatic Chaos by Jenny DeGeek.
Walking on shattered glass under a ladder with an opened umbrella in my house, a velvet black cat from head to toe crosses my path, hissing and screeching. The earth then starts shaking and cracking as molten embers fall from bleeding skies. Superstition laughs in my battered face dragging me to hell in a handbasket blazing, tested boundaries and limitation, not believing in unforgiven superstition. Bad luck finally came a knocking at my door, facing total annihilation. A coward pleads, begging on my knees, crying for mercy. As my heart drums, I toss a pinch of salt, first behind my right shoulder, then my left, instantly regretting not believing in its chaos. Laying in bloody shards of broken glass, I'm unable to flee from superstition's misery. Drinking from my puddle of tears is the villainous cat until he is fully satisfied. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Ah, she's biting into the realm of superstition and its reality when one takes it to heart instead of actually paying heed. The idea of walking under a ladder. You know what? You don't ever walk under a ladder for the simple reason if something falls, it's going to hit you. That's not a superstitious angle. It's an angle of reality. But we still walk that path of, hey, you don't do that, despite the fact that it's just as dangerous for you as for the person on the ladder. If you fall, the guy on the ladder is going to end up on the ground too. So and then that thought with the opening an umbrella in my house, never quite understood that one, but people roll from it. And the velvet black cat, that comes from way back in the day, based on what the hell was it? Not just witchery, so to speak, but black cats are always, or maybe it's from which black cats have always been looked upon as the evil familiars for witches and demons and such. So they offer up that note to darkness and what lies beneath that darkness. So that was an easy one. The earth starts quaking, shaking, and cracking. Well, earthquakes, there's nothing superstitious about that. You sit on fault lines, well, you got to get used to that idea. The thought of superstition lands in my battered face, dragging me to hell in a handbasket blazing. Well, with an earthquake going on, that's, or a volcano, that's dependent on where you decide to live. If you believe in the superstitions and you test the boundaries and limitations, then something is going to happen because, hey, that shit happens. It's an easy thought. And the look of tossing a pinch of salt because you spilled salt on a table. I never understood where that one came from, but that's okay. It's not a big deal. But it does point to the chaos that walks within the mind when you hold a lot of superstitions to heart. And the thought with the last stanza, can't flee from superstitious misery, drink from my puddle of tears, you're right back to the cat again. It's the villainous cat until he is fully satisfied. That's the idea. When you give in to superstition, it bites you in the ass because it always does. Something happens and you lay it out of superstition. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I should have done it. Well, don't think of it as superstition. You think of it as, hey, shit happens. Get over it.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, you know, sometimes you just have to, you know, if nothing else, look at your own choices and where they have led you rather than at superstition. And I liked your comment there, Rex, and especially when you pointed out the reality of walking underneath a ladder and how it's not just about superstition. You know, it really isn't at all about superstition. It's about having common sense. And the reality is that you're taking a huge chance walking under a ladder. I like that she brings in the black cat. Sadly, people, because of superstitions about black cats, they are unfortunately the cats that are least likely to get adopted when they're in shelters, and I think that's very sad. But yeah, I had to laugh when you said the whole idea of, like, you know, like just, you know, kicking in the ass at the end. And that's true. You know, oftentimes we're so obsessed with every little bad thing that happens with us being this idea of superstitions or bad luck that we don't look at the reality. You know, and I think we become, and I like how this speaks on becoming a victim of that. And I wonder if, you know, I'm sure there's probably also a reason why there's a superstition for it, but, you know, I don't know. To me, opening an umbrella inside the house seems kind of impractical for necessarily getting out of it. And also, like, I don't know, like, back when houses were smaller, you can imagine that, you know, opening an umbrella, you know, increased the possibility of hitting somebody with it, increased the possibility of it being near the fire. And there could have just also been that whole idea of capturing evil spirits or something. Like that. I don't know. It'd be an interesting thing to look into. I feel like this speaks strongly on the idea of becoming victims to our own superstitions, testing boundaries and limitations, not believing in unforgiving superstition. Bad luck finally came a knocking at my door, facing total annihilation, a coward pleads, begging on my knees, crying for mercy. You know, another thing is the subject of this poem and the way she presents it, I think it kind of has a very blues song-like quality to it. You know, not necessarily because, you know, it's not rhyming, so it doesn't necessarily have that lyrical rhyme that a blues song might, but it has that undertone of someone who is facing the hardship of life and trying to figure out the why of it all. So excellent write and very well done.
Friday the 13th. It's been unlucky for a number of reasons. Two of them being the Knights Templar were arrested in 1307 on Friday the 13th. And then were summarily tortured, then burnt at the stake afterwards. And Jacques de Molay said of his detractors, the king at that point in time, and the pope, he said, before the year's end, he would meet them in hell, so to speak. And they did both die not too long after his burning at the stake. And Christ had the Last Supper with 13 people at table, I think it was. He was arrested on a Thursday and executed the following day, so on a Friday. There's two origins, and there's more past that.
Oh, very cool. Thank you for that extra information, because yes, it is all about, tonight is about Friday the 13th, superstitions and those things that we find unlucky. And yeah, there is a history as you were pointing out, to Friday the 13th. And yeah, there's actually a club, but it does this today, and I think it came about in the 1900s or something like the early 1900s or late 1800s, called the 13 Club. If people haven't read about that, I highly recommend checking it out. There was a club where they were out to prove that 13 was not unlucky, that there was no such thing as anything that was unlucky, and so they would always have 13 guests at the table. Do things that would supposedly bring them either bad luck or death. They basically had a like whole, you know, thumbing their noses attitude at bad luck and the number 13. So yeah, I highly recommend checking that out, but very cool, Rex. Thank you for the info. All right. What was that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny that the guy who founded the 13 Club, William Fowler, he had attended PS 13. He built 13 structures, 13 Civil War conflicts, belonged to 13 clubs, and whenever possible, did significant things on the 13th of any month.
Yes, he was. He was what was called I forget what the exact word, but basically a lover of the number 13. And I guess he wanted everybody to share that love. All right, what do we have next?
Maybe Virginia Woolf, If Any, by Eric Sensen.
All right, and we have a SoundCloud for this one, so I'll go ahead and push play.
Maybe Virginia Woolf, If Any. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Woof, woof, yelp. How on earth are we to cope without fear's narcotic, idiosyncratic, enigmatic, or democratic, idiotic ideas? Nothing like a good scare to rev the heart pump. Pneumatic piston pump jump starts flaccid played waves. Autocratic superstition regulates the constitution. Old habits die hard. Ask Bruce or any Willis Jeep. Millennial brooms have merrily swept along quasi tricks or quirky treats. Red rubber ball bounce boogeyman fear on green quantum fields. Duality, dears, duality, says Dame Edna. The brightest day pined for the darkest night. The curious case of superstition delights. Of late, science declares that our DNA retains remnants of seven generations. Pragmatic mathematics hands you 7 times 40 equals 280 years of glorious, victorious, scary cat superstitions playing hide and seek within you. Bruce the Brave or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, chivalry isn't Dormouse dead yet, is it? Nothing wrong with mild doses of the fear narcotic, idiosyncratic, enigmatic enemas administered occasionally ensures excellent bowel movement, don't they? Figure of speech, they, nay, 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 they say, must say, when I become poetically constipated, I turn to scientific journals, allegorical, categorical correctness, tried and tested teases, poetic licentiousness, which is why this libertine pants like a dog on heat for the fifth dimension. Science says it's a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity, which is why I said, not which is why, wizardry isn't dead, never will be, dear darling Merlin poets. Oft, especially on Friday 13th, Elon Musk and I have a good chuckle in his fifth dimensional lounge. Knock on wood, knuckle rap, dear darling possums, please excommunicate fear forever. Enter.
Great read and write, Eric. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Eric wrote to the Rod Sterling quote, "There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition." And Rex, what did you think of Eric's write?
Poking fun at everything and everyone. It's like that, the title, "Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf," so to speak. And how on earth are we to cope without Sears' narcotic, idiosyncratic, enigmatic, or democratic, idiotic ideas? Nice tone there. Nothing like a good scare to red heart pump, pneumatic piston, jump, pump, jump, starts, plastic, plaid wave. Phew. And then autocratic superstition regulates the Constitution, old habits die hard. Ask Bruce Willis or any Willis Jeep. I like that thought. Willie Jeep, the original, the one that went to World War II and came back, a hardened note to that which lasts under any and all conditions and can go pretty much anywhere. Yes, Die Hard. Nice touch there with Bruce and the Willis Jeep. I like that. And then the thought of millennial brooms in there. I like that. And Dame Edna, was it a Barry Humphreys, Australian comedian, and then rolls in The Darkest Night, a reference to Batman, The Dark Knight. And then that sort of DNA retains remnants of seven generations. Actually, you can probably go back even further based on history in the mix. You can trail yourself back deeply in time. And then he had Robert the Bruce, Bruce the Brave, and Charlie and Chocolate Factory. And with that, chivalry isn't Dormouse dead yet, is it? figure of speech, and what else we got here? I like this one, because this is a nice barb. "Must say, when I become poetically constipated, I turn to scientific journals, allegorical, categorical, correctness, tried and tested, thesis, poetical licentiousness." Yeah, nothing like looking at dried, dead language that, that kind of conjures up something that I might actually roll out on. And then he hits on a fifth dimension, a note to the music group back in the 60s and 70s. And then that science says that the dimension is vast as space and as timeless as infinity. Kind of like a quiet note to Rod Serling in the Twilight Zone. And then switching which to which, the reality of W-I-T-C-H as opposed to W-H-I-C-H. I like that throw down there. Wizardry is dead. Never will be, dear darling Merlin poet. Yeah, dear mentality. And again, that note to Friday 13th, Elon and I have a good chuckle in his fifth dimensional lounge. Kind of a note to the thought of having the chip being placed in, so you're plugged in all the time. You've got the chip in your head. And then he rolls on the back end of this. Knock on wood, knuckle rap. Dear darling possums, please excommunicate fear forever. The idea of, hey, the only thing to actually fear about fear is fear itself. So, extricate.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do like how this speaks on the idea of learning to face our fears without having to have the backup of superstitions. Great comment there, Rex. I too got a big kick out of when he says, "Must say, when I become poetically constipated, I turn to scientific journals, allegorical, categorical correctness, tried and tested teases, poetic licentious." I like that idea of how the world of science can bring forth the world of poetics, and which is why this libertine pants like a dog on heat for the fifth dimension. Science says that the dimension is vast as space and is timeless and infinity, which is why I said not which is why wizardry isn't dead. Never will be, dear, darling Merlin poets. I like how he speaks on the idea that there is a magic to be found within the layers of life and poetry. This clever phrasing, wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really like another part I got a kick out of was millennial brooms have merrily swept along quasi tricks or quirky treats, red rubber ball bounce, boogeyman fear on green quantum fields. So I feel like those lines especially speak on that balance found when we open our mind to that which exists between the science and superstition. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
I'm normal. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, exclamation point. Phew, that was a close one, by Daniel Deschenaux. I consider myself a rational person, but I suppose irrational people think they're rational. But anyway, I check the facts, I look at things, I learn from experience so I can make the right choices. For example, weekday traffic seems worse from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m., so I leave at 7:15 and all is well. When I go to a restaurant, I always get the most popular item, figuring it has the most turnover, so it's the freshest and least likely to be rotten and make me sick. It's always worked. When I get on an airplane, I touch the outside before entering. Never crashed. The shirt I'm wearing right now, man, what a bad day I had today. And it's the same shirt I wore when I got in trouble last week at work and the week before. And when I couldn't sleep that night, I got to get rid of the shirt. Speaking of clothing, I should never have thrown away that baseball cap. The Red Sox has had a losing record ever since. Please don't tell anyone I'm the reason. It's my fault. 32 brush strokes with each hand, and I haven't had a cavity yet. Good thing I don't do 31 or 33. Imagine if I didn't say my prayers the night before I went to bed. What a fool I'd be. I can't imagine the horror that would happen. I remember that squeaky wheel shopping cart I stupidly used. I ended up buying that expired can of corn. What an idiot I was. I always used to put them back and take a different one. That's what I get for living on the wild side. I got it all figured out. I'm safe. Oh, my gosh. It's after 4 p.m. on a Tuesday in October, and I'm still on my phone. Last time I got the flu really bad. I better go eat red jello with salifor and listen to the Allman Brothers. That cured me the last time after 5 days of medicine didn't. I'm so glad. I'm logical. And fun.
Great read there, Rex. And what an awesome write by Daniel. I just got a big kick out of this. I'm really glad he was inspired. And I love that title, I'm Normal. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, exclamation points. Phew, that was a close one. You know, and I like how that focuses on the idea of not only that 7's a lucky number, but having to emphasize a point. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I ran this, I still can't run contests with the number 13. Like I ran a show or a contest for Friday 13th on superstitions, and I had to make sure to have 12 prompts. And then if it had been, I found 13, I would have had to track down a 14th one because, you know, I think we all have our quirkiness, our things that of, you know, superstitions that we come to lean on. I really like the humorous and straightforward style that he presents us this in, and the sardonic bite that it has at the end. I better go eat red jello with salad fork and listen to the Allman Brothers. That cured me last time after 5 days of medicine didn't. I'm so glad I'm logical. you know, the idea of not really taking an in-depth look at the way superstitions kind of mold our life. The part about the shirt makes me think about how people like real sports fanatics, of course, you know, have to have that special lucky shirt. As he says, even, you know, speaking of clothing, I should never have thrown away that baseball cap. The Red Sox have a losing record ever since. Please don't tell anyone I'm the reason. It's my fault. Oh my gosh. I mean, the humor in this, the presentation, the way that he takes a look how we all have our superstitions that we lean upon, even if we don't necessarily think about it until all of a sudden it's like shoved in our face. I don't know about eating Jell-O with a salad fork, but I have to say, you know, listening to the Allman Brothers sounds like a good idea. But, you know, I just think this is a wonderful, clever write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Yes, he's making fun of people on the quirkiness they attribute to taking care of superstitious acts. But since it's detailed enough on the inside, he's also making fun of himself for following the same thoughts. But that note's weekday traffic. That's an easy fix. That's not a superstition. That's an idea of understanding the flow and making sure, hey, I leave 15 minutes earlier. I don't have to worry about it. So that's an easy one. Same with the restaurant. If you're ordering the most popular item on the menu, it does have the highest turnover and will always be the freshest. So you go that way, you don't get sick. But those are easy thoughts you can evolve into superstition. But they're not actually. That's practicality. Now, the superstition walks in the next one, the shirt. He got into trouble that day, and the same one he wore the week before got in trouble, and the week before that he got in trouble. So it bothered him enough. He couldn't sleep, so he had to get rid of it. So that rolls in superstition. And the baseball cap, the one he threw away, and the Red Sox haven't won since. They haven't had a winning season since. Again, that's superstition. And the 32 brushstrokes. the thought that's a double misnomer, because that walks in the idea of brushing a particular way and not ever having a cavity. But also, I'm glad it rolls in the thought of good thing it's not 31 or 33. Got to hit the idea of superstition on the back end of it. The prayers at night, well, that's a religious angle. That's something right from youth. So you're still praying at the before bed each night. That's not a big deal. The squeaky wheel and buying the expired can of corn, well, you took the chance. That's one on you because you didn't pay attention to yourself knowing, blaming it on the squeaky wheel. And now the last one, the getting the flu because you're on it's a Tuesday night sober and it's after 4 p.m. You're still on the phone. Well, you got the flu. Funny thing is, some people would remember that note. Yeah, I got the flu because I was on the phone in October after 4 p.m. And again, I shouldn't go that route because it's bad juju.
Yep, so true. So true. Great comment there, Rex. And what do we have next?
Supernatural Superstitions by Betty Page.
Supernatural haunted mansions filled with spirits, dark superstitions, midnight twisted tales, mysteriously vivid ghosts and corridors, tales of history repeat daily at same hours, clues of mysteries. What's the real story? Who still lives that knows these tales? Superstitions lurk, looming round as fog, looking out for vicious black cats, just kittens on prowl. Watch when paths are crossed, Bloody Mary's reflection, eerily eyes glare. what's real, what is fake, maybe a little of each or both illusions. Supernatural, haunted mansions filled with spirits, dark superstitions, midnight's twisted tales, mysteriously vivid, ghosts in corridors, tales of history, repeats daily at same hours, clues of mysteries, poem. And Betty wrote to the prompt number 10, which was the quote, "Ah, yes, superstition. It would appear to be cowardice in face of the supernatural," by Theophrastus. And your thoughts, Rex?
A lot of it goes with imagination, shifts, and that. Look out for vicious black cats. You see that that huge black cat appearing on the as a shadow on the wall until you realize it's just a kitten on the prowl. The idea of being scared of something so easily natural as a kitten, even though it's just an expanded shadow, and it's just you jumping in shadows. As much of this kind of hits on that idea, but it also hits on the tales of history, repeats daily at the same hours, clues of mysteries. That can walk. There are some places that have their own natural aura. Things happen, things walk, but most of all of our suspicions come with the fact that we used to live in fear. The lizard angle of our brain was always fearful because we lived in the dark at night. There wasn't that sense of light before fire became a normality, and then candles and lanterns and such, which actually helped illuminate the night, because all the darkest things that could do us harm always emanated out of the dark. The lions, the tigers, the bears, the snakes, the spiders, all those natural, normal, unhealthy things which could corrupt and tear us to shreds always came out of the dark. And that's where the imagination comes into the thought with Bloody Mary's reflections, the haunted mansions are filled with spirits. I'll give a case. There might be some truth in that, the ghosts in corridors. There are some things that walk on other realms that do not hold a note to being easily rectified in thought and mind. And the thought of what's real, what is fake, maybe a little leech, or both illusions. Well, that's a temporal bit of what goes on within the mind. Do you believe enough to keep seeing, or is it that your mind is making up that which you fear the most?
I like that. Yeah, great observations there, Rex. And yeah, I like how she reminds us that there are those things of the unnatural world, of the world of mystery and ghosts. The reality that there could be a spirit realm. And I do particularly like those lines: "What's real? What is fake? Maybe a little of each or both illusions." And I also really like how she says, "Tales of history repeat daily at same hours." How oftentimes, ghost stories that you hear will be connected with the certain times of the day, or with the timing of the ghost's death. I do like how she brings in Bloody Mary. "Watch when paths are crossed. Bloody Mary's reflection, eerily eyes glare." Those stories that get passed down from one generation to the next, and where there's those blurred lines between truth and reality, because oftentimes those stories, whether it's fairy tales or superstitions, oftentimes are a reflection of a true historical past that kind of just gets twisted over time with telling. So Excellent, right, Betty, and very well done. And what do we got next, Russ?
Fifth Dimension by Weaver of Dreams.
All right, and we have a recording for that. So here we go.
In Twilight's realm, where shadows softly dance, the place where mysteries and wonders advance, there lies a realm beyond this, our mortal view, a fifth dimension, where dreams indeed come true. With secrets hidden within its timeless sphere, a realm where truth and mystery can cohere. Between the light and shadows it resides, a middle ground where science softly guides. Vast as space, its boundless wonders sprawl, a cosmic tapestry, its warp and weft will fall. As twilight's cloak, where truths and fables blend, where our superstitions find their journey's end.
Great read and write, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Kate always has such a beautiful reading voice. I really love the rhyme and flow in this and the imagery. She wrote to the same prompt that Eric did, and it's always great to see how different poets take the same prompt. And I like how she speaks on this middle ground, this fifth dimension, which is about finding that balance between the reality and the world of superstition or the spiritual world, with secrets hidden within its timeless sphere, a realm where truth and mystery can cohere. Between the light and shadows, it resides a middle ground where science softly guides. Vast as space, its boundless wonders sprawl, a cosmic tapestry, its warp and weft will fall. I love the use of the words warp and weft, and the whole idea of this universal painting of that balance and that creation found within the truth and fable. One of my obsessions that I'm watching right now on YouTube is when they talk about fairy tales and their twisted beginnings, or nursery rhymes and their twisted beginnings, and how oftentimes they're either based on superstition or they're based on true stories. I like how she speaks. To me, this also speaks on the idea of being open-minded enough to be guided by both the scientific and the spiritual. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the other one kind of hit on the same thing, but really, Kate really dipped in the rod and the twilight zone thought between light and shadow, a middle ground where science softly guides, vast space, boundless wonders, really hitting on that tone of Sterling and the twilight zone, but mysteries that walk within that angle where the mind, because this hits on the idea of not just commingling within, this hits on the idea of habitation of sleep, where the mind can actually walk into those realms and take a full view in different lights, because why? It is sort of the fifth dimension, sleep. It is that shadow ground, that place where the mind goes after the body is asleep. So it is a new sphere, a new realm, a new world that gets explored. And most oft times, the thought of superstitions do find their journey then, because your mind is working on a different level altogether, offering up notes to dreams and maybe passions and thoughts that didn't find their way through the course of the day itself.
Great comment, Rex. And yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, you're right. It does kind of have that idea. It does have that idea of what it's like for the sleeping, the mind that is trying to sleep and can't, you know, and all that comes to view within. And what do we have next?
We have I walked under a ladder by time. I walked under a ladder, and that black cat from the street keeps crossing my path. I said to myself, no need to worry, I don't believe in any of that hocus pocus, secretly crossing my fingers. And then yesterday, I awake to see the world once again at its worst. Once again, I am in tears at seeing people I don't know will never meet in pain and fear. The horrible luck of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Again and again and again and again and again. The righteous fight the righteous, all have their superstitions, and it's the innocents who are always forced to choose and are the ones who pay dearly. And here I might be guilty of belittling their payments by calling it luck. And by righteous, I mean people who believe they have right on their side, which in conflict is everyone. And there I am, worrying about ladders and cats or the peacock feathers a friend has in their house. You know, that's unlucky, I say. You might not win the bingo now. Yes, she says, but luck is something that arrives in many forms, and mistakes I have made that have left me feeling very lucky and grateful, for I am still here. I wonder if I ignore superstitions, what will happen if I were caught up in some atrocity? Does luck mean to die quickly or to escape altogether? How many black cats does it take to end up being tortured or left as the only survivor in a family? How many ladders or peacock feathers in the house before that red button is pushed and I am not lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time, leaving me to be one of those people whose tragedy is broadcast across the rest of the surviving world? The last time I felt like crying at the news was a long time ago, and now after all these years, here we are again, only this time crying for the world. And Bon.
Good read, Rex. This is another awesome take on the prompt. I have to say, you know, the writing, the contest didn't get a lot of rights, but every single one of them had some just really creative and wonderful takes on the prompt. I like the straightforward style of this. Again, we've got some great sense of humor. I said to myself, no need to worry. I don't believe in any of that hocus pocus, secretly crossing my fingers. And yesterday I awake to see the world once again at its worst, you know, and I think to me that kind of when again, once again, where it says see the world once again at its worst, you know, we want an explanation. We demand to know why the world is at its worst. And the logical reason is, and I think it goes back to the whole idea of people doing what is not right for the good of humanity, but rather selfishly doing only what is good for the you know, rights of the pocketbook or, you know, the political agendas. But I did not know about the superstition of the peacock feather in a house. I'd never heard of that. So I learned something new. And I like how this takes a look at an individual's life and yet takes a look at the broader perspective of luck and superstition and how, you know, one person's idea of bad luck can be another person's idea of good luck. You know, how many black cats does it take to end up being tortured or left as the only survivor in a family? How many ladders or peacock feathers in the house before that red button is pushed and I am not lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time? You know, wonderful, wonderful, right? Looking at not only superstitions, but the state of the world in this moment. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Poking fun at self for the superstitious angle of thoughts that she holds. And then waking up to find that everything's ablaze once more, and chiding herself for the fact that she's worrying about the little touches of walking under a ladder, a black cat, and peacock feathers. And there are other larger travails at the forefront.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. All right. And what do we got next?
Fingers Crossed by S.E.
I found the bones of a broken man propping up the old church wall, his mossy hair and teeth bequeathed to fashion a wreath the day the walls came down. On the far side of town, a man-sized hole in the fluffy rigmarole that pulls from underneath. His emaciated hands tearing redundant yesterday's down. Complex fragments scattered ours to try and understand. Tried and tested allegories obscured in the squint of vagaries. The iniquities of a father strapped to children's backs, a feline curse thrown from a black cat's eyes, punishment for stepping on the cracks, butterfly kisses and eyelash wishes, dandelion clocks and all that he misses, cold with shock, fingers crossed, a religion of superstition on the periphery of a paradise lost. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it does walk that that realm of hitting on, well, the sort of superstition bite here, and kind of hits on the idea of walking into that realm of superstition to the point that we have given up on the thought of what paradise could have been, because we've lost the note of who and what we are with all the superstition that works out of it. I did like that note of paradise lost, the idea of the beauty given out because of our own idiosyncrasies and stupidity.
Are you, oh yeah. Is your comment done, Rex?
Yep.
Okay, sorry, it just kind of dropped off, so I wasn't quite sure. But great comment there. And, you know, I like how so much of this is superstitions that we learn as a child, like don't step on a crack or you'll break your mother's back, or, you know, blowing the dandelion fluff, or as they often, I guess, call them in Great Britain, which I learned from a different show, dandelion clocks, and how it puts on to children a sense of guilt and a sense of responsibility that if they don't, you know, avoid those cracks and if they don't blow those dandelion clocks, you know, then things are going to be horribly wrong and they're going to miss their chance to get into paradise. I do like your observation, you know, on how it speaks on how we're so, you know, wrapped up in these superstitions that we often miss that opportunity to find paradise. But I love the imagery and metaphors in this and how it speaks in that voice of innocence lost due to obsessions with superstitions. So excellent write and very well done. And I know we have one last one left for this, so let's go ahead and get that one in, if you don't mind, Rex.
In the Caveman Days by Lawrence 67. In the Caveman Days. Oogie Oogie Loogie. Translation. Hey, what have you there, Mr. Oogie? Oogie. Oogie Oogie Boogie. Will you look at this? I was rubbing two sticks together when, to my surprise, this fiery thing popped out, and I believe this could be a turning point in our evolution. We just have to handle it properly. Oogie. Oogie Oogie Woogie. Translation. Right on, bro. What you going to call it? Oogie, oogie, boogie. I'm going to call it Dave. Oogie, oogie, bamsuki. Translation. All right. Good name. Good name. And end poems.
Oh, I love it. It's so great. Wonderful humor. Just love the way you read oogie, oogie, woogie. Oogie, oogie, boogie. Oh, that cracked me up. But great humor, right, by Lauren67. I love how he speaks on the discovery of fire and how that could have been perceived as a moment of just pure coincidence and good luck. I particularly like not only the Oogie Woogies, but where he says, I believe this could be a turning point in our evolution. We just have to handle it properly. And, of course, the humor in, you know, what are you going to call it? I'm going to call it Dave. Good name. Good name. You know, wonderful performance piece and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Pointing out the irony in life, because it hits on the idea of coming up with this, rubbing two sticks together. Oh, this fiery substance comes out. What are you going to call it? Dave? It points to the irony of how we look at things, view things, and even though he's got the note too fiery already there, he calls it Dave instead of what it is, fire in the moment, or heat, or warm, or so. But it also points to the fact that before that, everything was dark, yet he doesn't offer up the note to light either, or the fact that there is a note to now that can be safety, and you still have to deal with it properly, and that's the angle of superstition, dealing with them properly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, this one was cool. I liked it. And great observations there, Rex. Yeah, great show tonight. Thank you, as always, Rex. Thank you to Jean for everything she does in the background. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to keep an eye out on all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late night poet hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us later tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And then you can join Mathasiana for Part Sinner, Part Saint on Saturday. And just a great lineup of poetry all weekend. I know Rex has a contest running for Rhythm and Rhyme. And on Sunday, and why don't you go ahead and tell us quickly about that, Rex?
The 50th anniversary of the Joker album by Steve Miller. I've got all, I think, 7 or 8 songs listed. Just pick one to play with and have some fun.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Very cool. And thank you, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night, all.